And welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Beth, the keen-eyed have observed that I am not Chief Justice Bonnie Sutter. The chief is being honored at this hour by the county commissioners for her 25 years of service to Tarrant County. So you have Dabney Basil as her substitute. The other members of our panel are on my right, Justice Dana Womack, and on my left, Justice Brian Walker. Karen, please go ahead and call the case.
The court will now call Jessica Chandler and Scott Park and may it please the court, Ms. Julia Hendry to argue for the appellate, Mr. Philip Canati to argue for the appellate.
Go ahead, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Julia Hendry on behalf of Jessica Chandler and Sculpt Pod. The party seeking sanctions has the burden to show why they are appropriate. And this case is about a default as to liability as a discovery sanction. Then there was a very short damages trial. So part of that burden, unfortunately, failure to have a record made at a hearing doesn't meet that burden. Failure to get any information on whether the opposing party herself had any part in failing to answer the discovery is a failure to carry that burden of proof. There was no evidence that my client, Ms. Chandler, the owner of the corporate entity, which was created long after the event that caused this case, there was no evidence she was a disobedient party or had flagrant bad faith or that her conduct represented the presumption that her pleadings lacked merit. And I do want to note that yes, the trial court went through several stages of escalating sanctions. However, it's interesting that in the January 2019 first order imposing sanctions, the admissions were deemed and the objections to interrogatories were overruled. But anyway, here's the big one as far as Jessica Chandler is concerned, and that's the failure to serve a subpoena on the party against whom you're seeking death penalty sanctions renders that order a nullity, and that's in Ray Blanchard. And in my brief, I obviously cited that, but I didn't know then if KMCC would come up with something I wasn't seeing in the record, a return of citation. There was a citation for personal service that appeared in there. It was for a hearing that ultimately got rescheduled, and I didn't show it didn't show any service, but and I didn't hear in the reply brief or in the response that there was any service. So I believe that order against Ms. Chandler individually is a nullity. But with regard to the sanctions against both the appellants, her and her corporation, I want to talk about the standards for death penalty sanctions, which there are a lot of cases since Transamerican versus Powell, but still they all go back to it. It was the first and current big case saying, here's how you do death penalty sanctions. Here are the guiding rules and principles for that trial court to decide whether to impose that. And so obviously, the point of requiring personal service before you hold someone in contempt is directly related to the requirement that you determine if that person had anything to do with the failure to answer.
Let me step you real quick. Let me go back just real fast as to Jessica Chandler. You said that there was some reference for some hearing that got rescheduled to service. That was not a subpoena, correct? That was just a reference to service.
No, there was a subpoena, issued before that. I'm sorry. There was a subpoena for her issued before that. That's on the record.
But that was for another hearing that didn't,
right,
at a different time.
Right, and there was never a service of it, and then it got rescheduled.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't think there's any service. So, okay, back to Transamerican, which requires the court determine who is responsible for the failure, the sanctionable conduct. And the court very specifically said, here are your two standards, trial court. A direct relationship must exist between the offensive conduct and the sanction imposed. They must be just, and that's where it says, the sanction must be visited upon the offender. And the court must make an attempt to determine, is it the party, the lawyer, or both that are responsible for the offensive conduct? And my opponent cited a case out of this court that's a pretty darn good example of very offensive conduct by the party, the Hernandez, I believe it is, case. That's an example of when you sanction the party himself. This sanction took my client's very valid defense due process rights away from her. The sanction must not be excessive. The punishment should fit the crime, is exactly what the court said. It should be no more severe than to accomplish the legitimate purpose, which is get the discovery answered in this case. And that's the whole point of Rule 215, which is what says how you can impose the sanction. So, yes, I really couldn't say the trial court went directly to death penalty without these various stages. And I think the discovery was initially sent to one attorney she had, and a month after that, this other attorney substitutes in. But yeah, the court makes no attempt to not only to determine whether there's any involvement of her, but whether she even gave her information to the other attorney. And my distinguished opponent expressed his frustration at one of the hearings because he was involved in another case involving the whole Sculpt Pod franchise problem, and Ms. Chandler was answering discovery there. So,
You don't think that the findings in the court's order of June 19th, 2020 are sufficient to support a death penalty sanction if we assume they should be visited on the client individually?
The findings of fact and conclusions of law is that one. I submit that they're not valid when you have a liability default. They're just not appropriate, and they're not valid because none of those things have been determined. Yes, the pleadings have been accepted, it's true, but I don't think that technically can support this abuse of discretion in deeming the admission or in the default as to liability. So, interestingly, my opponent did not really respond to my argument that Transamerican says the trial court must determine, or attempt at least to determine, whether it's the client, the lawyer, or both involved in the sanctionable conduct. So in the brief, they did say the parties themselves are responsible for answering discovery, as are their lawyers. So somehow the Chandler defendants are responsible for the non-answers. But that's not something Ms. Chandler was supposed to do herself. It's not what the rules and case law require, and it rather defeats the point of hiring an attorney. It's a failure of consideration in your fee contract with your attorney, I would even think, if he doesn't answer. And then you better keep checking on him to see if he's answered. So anyway, the existing findings of fact and conclusions of law do not shore up the entire basis of the judgment. But let me move to the second point, which applies only to the corporate entity Sculpt Pod. Now, it came into existence recently before a little over a year and a half had passed since the case had started up. I believe that's the timing. And admittedly, did it exist at the time it was alleged to have committed these deceptive, fraudulent acts, etc.? The entire crux of the plaintiff's case was that my client had sold them these franchises in Florida for the body sculpting businesses, and that she had induced them by telling them what a typical monthly revenue would be. And of course, when they didn't get that right away, they shut down after a few months, but they sued her for misrepresentations, et cetera. And the contract with the integration clause is in the case. So I do think that there are very valid defenses to this case that my clients were denied the ability to present. But let's talk strictly about the corporate entity, because yes, it's created later, so it's kind of hard to find them guilty, liable for fraud in the inducement or misrepresentations because they didn't exist. But also, a corporate entity acts through its individual representatives, its principal, which in this case is strictly Jessica Chandler. A conspiracy requires an underlying tort. That's the only cause of action pleaded against Sculpt-Pod. Now, there are sentences in the pleading that say Sculpt-Pod conspired to defraud and misrepresent, but in the causes of action, it's conspiracy. It really doesn't plead a separate tort against the corporation, and that's required for a conspiracy to be established. It's not its own cause of action. So, again, you can't find that a corporation conspired with its principal because it has to act through that principal. And not real clear on the appellee's argument that it's possible that Ms. Chandler was conspiring with the corporation in an individual capacity. But we're looking at, in dealing with KNCC, the parties who purchased the franchise, Sculpt-Pod is acting through Ms. Chandler. It's not vice versa. It's just, here's who Sculpt-Pod's actions must be done through. So because of that, it can't conspire with her. So. Trial by sanctions is very much discouraged, and I believe it was an abuse of discretion here because these various standards that the Supreme Court has said a trial court should follow really were ignored. These guiding rules and principles were not followed, and therefore Jessica Chandler and Sculpt-Pod, Inc. asked this court to reverse and remand so they can have a chance to answer the discovery and try to get their due process ability to defend the case on the merits. If you have no further questions.
Thank you. Go ahead.
This matter should be distilled down to two basic points, as Ms. Pendery very competently pointed out. The first, of course, is that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in granting sanctions, striking the appellants, Jesse Chandler, and the Sculpt-Pod's pleading. Briefly on that. As you have likely read already, the appellants did not answer discovery. And I'm not talking about a little minor oops. I'm talking there were 765 days between the time that they were first served and when the court entered June 19, 2020 order striking the pleadings. The appellants did not comply with the three prior orders that were in there. Now, the first order occurred on January 25, 2019. Ms. Pendery alluded to that as being curious, and the reason I would presume it was curious is because apparently the appellants filed for bankruptcy moments before. Neither the 393, which was the court that had the case and heard the first motion, nor the 465th was aware of that. We went through with the motion, then we learned of the bankruptcy. It was, the automatic stay was lifted, they remanded it back, they pulled it back into federal court to have it pursued under the bankruptcy court, it was remanded to state court, and then the second motion to compel was filed. As your honors will see, the second order essentially parrots the first order with one minor difference, I believe. Instead of $500 in sanctions, it was $1,000 sanctions. In short, if you ignore the first order, you can still treat the second order as an almost identical starting spot in August of 2019. They didn't comply with that one, which led to the third motion. Now, on November 25th, 2019, the opposing counsel mentioned that, and following it, that they were trying to pull together the documents. And back in CR 256 and 257, he indicates that they want additional time to pull the documents together. Nevertheless, about 200 days go by between the time they say they're trying to pull the documents together and when the court struck the pleadings as its fourth and final order. And to clarify, I say fourth. The first was 393rd. The second, third, and fourth were with Judge Breeding, the trial court counsel judge, sorry. So Jessica Chandler had also been sanctioned three separate times in a concurrently pending case. There were five cases pending in Collin County against Jessica Chandler, Savvy Chic, the case that was in the party that was eventually went to bankruptcy, and the Skull Pod. And those orders progressively are attached to CR 238, CR 242, and CR 245. The court found in its November 29, I believe, order, whatever the November 2019 order that was circulated by the parties, that the conduct of the defendants and that of their trial counsel results in a complete obstruction of the discovery process. Now, obviously we contend that the sanctions were directed against the conduct that caused them, so to speak, which was failing to answer discovery for more than about 2 years, 755 days.
Counsel, let me yes, stop you and ask you a couple of questions. First one is, this transfer, Judge Breeding got appointed, I think, and then took the bench. Was this transfer because of that, that they took some cases from other courts and then filed?
That is my understanding, just a small talk before hearing, that she got, I'm going to say, interesting cases from other cases, that she took the bench and other courts transferred their, we might have called them dead fish cases. I don't know what she calls them.
But it was a response of her getting appointed.
That was my understanding of how we came to be transferred into her court. Yes, Your Honor.
And then, now, you're getting into the, I guess, the egregiousness of the discovery, lack of responding to discovery. Do you concede that even if there had been 10 hearings, and, I mean, just the worst case scenario, the trial court still has to make sure that the litigant, the party, is privy to this. Don't you agree with that?
I believe it's the court's responsibility to determine who's responsible, so to speak. In the same token, the party can't hide behind the attorney, and the attorney can't use to shield the party, so to speak. The court made those findings in its November 2019 order that assessed the responsibility, if you will, to the defendant.
But is there anything, did Ms. Chandler never attended one of these hearings?
The first hearing that she actually attended was probably the June 20, whatever the trial was, Your Honor. There was a notice to show cause.
The hearings that resulted in the sanctions order, she never attended any of these
hearings. That is correct, Your Honor.
And it's our I think the law is pretty clear. The trial court must at least attempt to determine whether the offensive conduct is attributable only to counsel, only to the party, or both. So what is in this record that shows the conduct is attributable to Ms. Chandler?
Besides the third order and the findings of fact, there is, and for the findings of fact, of course, it's third supplemental credit court report four. As Defense counsel admitted the responsive documents that existed and been produced in another case, the second volume of reporter's record, 13 lines 3 through 18. And, of course, Ms. Chandler had been repeatedly sanctioned for the same conduct.
Yep. But do you agree that's another court, that's another case? I see that that's delineated within the finding of fact and conclusions of law, but, where's the evidence of that, I guess you could say? I mean, it's just simply, candidly, it sounds like the judge was familiar with what was going on over here, but that's not what the statute requires. You agree with that?
If you mean by the requires to determine who is responsible, I do. But I believe that she did that based on conversation with counsel and the hearing. You are correct, Your Honor, that Jessica Chandler chose not to appear at the hearing. She had been given notice of the motion for sanctions and seeking death penalty. That's what the notice of hearing and order to show cause attached at 4th Supplemental CR Volume 6 was. Ms. Pender is correct. That was for a hearing on that same motion. That hearing was rescheduled. But at that point, she has noticed that there are sanctions being sought because of her noncompliance with the schedule.
Was she personally served with an order to show cause, though? Not with a subpoena, but with an order to show cause. And was it personal service on her, not her attorney?
Your Honor, I'm going to be honest. I don't recall for certain. I have a feeling that it was through the opposing counsel, but I can't tell you either way. So I'm going to have to assume that it was through opposing counsel since he represented her, and I can't call seeing something in the record one way or another.
But don't you agree that to hold somebody in contempt, they have to be personally served with an order to show cause?
Unless the counsel agrees to accept service, is my understanding.
You think counsel can waive service and accept service on a contempt motion and an order to show cause? Do you have any authority to support that?
Your Honor, obviously, that was my understanding. I have not researched the issue. I can tell you definitively I have authority that says that.
Thank you.
I always want to call it Transamerica.
Case.
Says aware of, that the client has to be aware of counsel's conduct. So that's what I'm looking for, is awareness by Ms. Chandler that her counsel was not doing what he was supposed to do.
I can only refer to what I've told you, Your Honor, so far, and I can see the point of question you're going with, which was, she was interacting with counsel. She received the notice. You can't hide behind counsel. I think it was either the Transamerica case or Spahn, which indicates that you can't hide behind the counsel, nor can you blame the counsel in order to avoid the responsibility for discovery. And there is a concurrent responsibility to participate in the case.
But how do you control counsel if you don't know what, if there's not any evidence in the record, you don't know what he's doing?
That is going to be the focal point, no doubt, of appellant's argument that it was all laid at the feet of opposing counsel. And you're correct. I can't point to something in the record that demonstrates for certain he did what he was supposed to do upon and conveyed communications, other than the repeated references in the record of, I need time to confer with my client. We're gathering these documents together for you in response to the court's order that perhaps it's an inference, perhaps it's suggestions, that I understood to mean he was conferring with his client. His client was aware of the discovery that had been pending since May of 2018. And every conference I had with him, that is reflected in there, shows that he's acting for extension to take the time to interact with his client, to gather those documents.
And you can see that there was more than one attorney. There was a change of attorney in this process as well, correct?
There was at its infancy. The case was filed, I want to say, winter of 2017, 3 months later. The first amended petition was filed, which Sculpt Pad was audited. Ms. Pendery mentioned some reference to recently created being Sculpt Pod. And I believe that's what she's actually talking about, because we don't know exactly when Sculpt Pod was created. There is nobody conceding that it did not exist at the time of all this. In fact, the pleadings, and more specifically the Dean of Commissions show, and this is, I think, set forth on page 27 of the appellee's brief, a number of concurrently taken actions between Jessica Chandler and the Sculpt Pod as part of the underlying torts.
At some point, y'all, I think, amended your petition to include Sculpt Pod, correct?
Sculpt Pod was amended approximately 3 months after the lawsuit was filed, February February 9 of 2018. The suit was actually filed November 29, 2017, so less than 3 months after filing. That's when a time we realized that the representations were false and that she has created, at some point in time, a competing business. It's our contention that that was done contemporaneously. The deemed admissions show that they participated concurrently in the activities. There are, in fact, pleadings raising this in the supplemental pleadings. It's subparagraph 5, 6, I want to say 7, and 10. So there's three representations regarding DTPA misrepresentations that are in the first supplemental petition filed before trial, specifically identifying things that both Sculpt Pod and Jessica Chandler did concurrently.
And would you concede that if we were to determine that there should have been some kind of notice, some kind of inclusion of the party before these death penalty sanctions were entered, that these other issues are pretty much moot as far as the appellate court is concerned at that point?
The other issues, you meaning the remaining?
Right.
I'm not going to concede that, but yeah, it seems to me that if you decide that she can't be, sanctioned for the conduct of herself and court and her attorney as found by the court, it still leaves the sanctions against Sculpt Pod as well. But I think that at this point you get into the notion of if this court would decide it differently than the trial court did, presuming the trial court didn't abuse its discretion, obviously we can't displace that. But I'm just a wee attorney and you guys are the justices on the
sure,
court.
Sure. So,
I'm not sure where I was. May I continue?
Sure. Okay.
And Your Honor, I was mentioning the amended pleadings. CR 280 through 284 is a supplemental pleading. We have direct violations of the DTPA listed there on paragraph 5, sorry, claim 5, 6, 10, and then 12 is a conspiracy claim. So addressing the issue of whether or not Jessica Chandler and her multiple capacities can conspire with herself, I understand Ms. Pendry's position on that, except that the reality is if it's as easy as I'm just going to create multiple companies to compete with you and you can never prove that I acted to defraud you, that kind of defeats the purpose. And that's actually something that the Fotnick case recognized, which is if that individual is serving in multiple capacities, in that case it was he was a, I believe, a board member of a bank and also the owner of a competing agricultural equipment business. The court said it is conceivable that he could serve in both capacities, and thus the general rule which they accept does not apply here. It was sufficient for the court then to find that the underlying court's findings of a conspiracy existed because the individual, the banker slash equipment owner there, Ms. Chandler here, served in two different capacities. Here she's got three, but it's as owner of the Sculpt Pod, is as owner of Savvy Schick, and of course, and herself.
So the general rule you're alluding to and is actually that in order to conspire, you have to conspire with, one person has to conspire with somebody else in order for it to be conspiracy. Is that what you mean by the general rule?
The general rule is that I think that Ms. Pendry quoted was that a corporation cannot conspire with itself. And that's where, and I probably mispronounced it, I say FOTIC, F-O-J-T-I-K case that's cited in our brief, notes on the back of it where the facts are undisputed. It is conceivable that Chestnut, the banker slash equipment owner, if he had conspired with the bank, did so in his capacity not as a corporate agent but as an independent equipment dealer. So they're recognizing that he wears two different hats. It is our contention that applies here and that Ms. Chandler was wearing multiple hats when she decided to set up a company to compete with the very franchise she sold to somebody, giving rise to this case. So, I apologize, this is my first time with y'all, and this is a new one to me. So, going to the return, I think that the court has delved into its thoughts on whether or not there's service or adequate proof that Jessica Chandler was aware of it and therefore could be sanctioned. Operating the assumption that the trial court's findings that she was responsible set forth in the findings of fact and in the third order. They establish both the third order from November 2019 and the findings of fact that are attached show a direct nexus between the defendant's conduct and the sanctions, and that they were actually tried less severe sanctions that did not work and brought into. Trial counsel obviously was aware of what was going on. Can go into the litany of it, but the reality is the records reflect, for example, in the third volume of the reporter's record on pages 15 and 14, that they were making efforts to get the documents from their clients responses. Therefore, by the counsel's own admission, they are aware of the outstanding request and outstanding order to compelling the materials, and yet in the 200 days that passed, that did not occur. Your Honor, you pointed out, yes, you're talking about the Tricia Lee case. That was another case in which you've sanctioned. And you're right. It's kind of the circumstantial evidence notion. But it does go to show a pattern and practice established that this particular individual, Jessica Chandler, had a demonstrated pattern of not complying with court orders to basically blunt or delay the discovery process. This case was pending for 2.5 years. Zero discovery was possible, with the exception of, I think, a request for disclosure that was answered nearly 2 years late. No discovery, no deposition. Ms. Pendery, understandably and wisely, and I've worked with her many years ago, she's a far better appellate attorney than I'll ever aspire to be, lays it at the feet of opposing counsel. But opposing counsel's own statements and own emails show he was working with the client to get the documents. That's an inference to me that the client was aware of it. Another court, not binding here obviously, went through the same exercise and sanctioned her as well.
If the trial judge is about to enter death penalty sanctions, there's no record that there's been a subpoena for the actual party. And the counsel gets up there and says, I told her she's got to be here, but she didn't show, or something of that nature, or that she knew about this, Are you saying, so your position is that's enough. Counsel's assertion is enough.
It is my understanding, and to be clear, trial counsel did not make that brazen of a statement in there. Counsel's statement, and I want to say there's one on CR 256, there's somewhere in the third supplemental volume that of the reporter's record that he acknowledges he's looking for the documents and he's asking for additional time to get the documents from his clients. That is, if that's a fault, then it's a fault. That's as close as we're going to get. The conversations I've had with them, which are telephone calls, so they don't matter here, repeatedly said, I'm working with my client to get the data, dot, dot, dot. It was just a litany of excuses that led to zero discovery over 720 days.
But you can see that could indicate one of two things. It could indicate an attorney who's just blowing smoke and not doing their job, or an attorney who's dealing with a client who is dropping the ball.
You're right, Your Honor. It is very possible either way, which is why, and I forget if it was Transamerican Respond that says, goes back to the notion you can't hide behind the counsel, even if it's incompetent. So I've got 12 seconds, so in order to at least say it. Obviously, we ask that the court affirm the judgment. If it finds that it should be remanded in part, then remand in part and affirm in part as it sees fit. But I think that the record shows that there was no abuse of discretion and the sanctions were appropriate. I apologize for going over.
Oh, no. Thanks, sir.
I just want to touch on a couple of things. And again, not saying the trial court didn't try various things, but interesting, actually it's on the record that counsel said, I didn't come to that hearing because I called the court and said we had taken bankruptcy. So he thought that automatically froze. Whatever. So, and then he also said, I didn't get notice that there actually was a hearing set 6 months later. We talked about a date, but never got anything specific. So, okay, anyway. I do want to hit the notion that counsel says he pleaded more than conspiracy against the corporation. And yes, I would start looking at the record at 271, clerk's record. And it is interesting because there's a whole lot of Ms. Chandler did this, Ms. Chandler did that. Now, there's one place that says these parties were part of a conspiracy to defraud. There are a couple of places, although most of these specific violations actually say Defendant Chandler violated the DTPA, section whatever. Jessica Chandler violated DTPA section this. There are a couple of places on one DTPA section where it says defendant. But everywhere else actually says, I think everywhere else actually says, there's one other that uses the word defendant. So
it's your position that pleading did not give fair notice that there were two corporations conspiring with each other?
Yeah, well, he wasn't suing two corporations. He was saying Chandler and this corporation created later conspired, and the only actual under the causes of action, the only actual one over against this new corporation was conspiracy. But in the discussion of facts and causes of action, there are a couple of places that say defendants. And it's kind of hard to say Sculpt Pod conspired with her to do these things when it was created after they had shut down the franchise. So anyway, I think that's way too big a stretch to say what the pleadings were against Sculpt Pod. And in any event, it can't conspire with its principal.
Counselor, if I may, just since you bring it up, that, I mean, I, my understanding based on what I've read is you have the suit was pending. They filed suit while the franchises were still in existence. Then it was maybe 9 months to a year later that they actually closed it down. The franchises closed down after the lawsuit was already pending. And, of course, the assertion is that Sculpt Pod itself was included 3 months after the initial petition was filed. So are you certain that these franchises had been closed down prior to the existence of Sculpt Pod? I mean, I know it's not in the record, but you've made that statement.
Your Honor, I'm not certain, but what I saw was in the record, in the pleadings, them saying we closed down after just a few months, and over a year passes, but then we have it's a recently created entity. So, yes, I searched for an actual date Sculpt Pod was created. And, you know, you got a pretty limited record in something like this, but, hey, I think recently says that. Now, let me also tell you, again, the only reason that counsel can say somehow they were a competing entity created to compete with them, of course, again, they weren't in that business anymore, but that's the kind of thing that only comes in through the admissions that my client had no opportunity to answer or to look at. So if the court has no further questions, I will step down.
You bet.
Thank you.
We appreciate your able and candid arguments. Your case is submitted.
Thank you.